Aristotle's categories, writes Davidson College professor of philosophy David Studman, is a singularly important work of philosophy. It not only presents the backbone of Aristotle's own philosophical theorizing, but has exerted an unparalleled influence on the systems of many of the greatest philosophers in the Western tradition. This is the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. Freshman philosophy begins by being thrown into the deep end as students jump into Aristotle's categories. In that work, Aristotle outlined the framework needed to read and understand the works our Wyoming Catholic College students will encounter later in their philosophical journey: the physics, the metaphysics, and the Nicomachean ethics. Their guide to the categories this semester is Dr. Michael Bolin, whose specialties are the works of St. Thomas Aquinas and Aristotle. I asked Dr. Bolin to begin by telling us about Aristotle. Who was he? Why was he important?
Well, he is one of the most famous philosophers of all time. He was a Greek philosopher from Stagira in Greece in the fourth century BC. And he's universally acknowledged as one of the greatest philosophers, if not the greatest. He was a student of Plato, who was himself a student of Socrates, so one of the great trio. And he was influential on pretty much every branch of science today. He has respectively been called the father of philosophy, the father of logic, the father of biology, the father of meteorology, and the list goes on and on. So he was a polymath, but most famous for being a philosopher and a biologist. I think it is fair to say there's a branch of science existing today that was not influenced by him. He was dominant in philosophical thought, at least until the Renaissance era, and even in sciences that have since diverged from Aristotle, like physics, his influence is still there.
Now, how is it that our freshmen begin their philosophical journey reading the categories? That seems like a difficult place to jump in.
That is a difficult place to jump in. It's one of the principal texts in logic, which is philosophy 101. So yes, after we read a few Platonic dialogues, we jump into the categories. And the reason is, it is itself the first work in a series of works known as the Organon, which means something like Aristotle's tool or toolbox, where the idea is his works on logic, which is a tool for the rest of his philosophical thought, is contained in that series. And the categories is the first of those works. So it's sort of the natural beginning to the standard philosophical sequence. So as the semesters go on, we go through logic, philosophy of nature, philosophy of man, ethics, politics, metaphysics, and that's the standard sequence. But this is an important work in philosophy.
I read that the categories, quote, enumerates all the possible kinds of things that can be the subject or the predicate of a proposition. What does that mean?
So a very important theme in Aristotle is that he sees common speech as a guide to the way things are. It's not necessarily fully determinative, but the idea is our words are always in one way or another an attempt to get at the realities of things. And so he's very interested in the question, how do we speak about things, and what does that manner of speech assign of with respect to the way things really are? So if you take any proposition, you say Socrates is a man or Socrates is Greek, Aristotle's interested in the question, what are the realities behind those sentences? Grammatically, those are identical. You have Socrates is Greek, Socrates is a man. But from the point of view of the logician, they're very different, because Socrates is a man. That's his nature, his essence. It tells you what he is. But Greek is a property or an attribute of Socrates. It is not his intrinsic nature. And so for the logician, we'll say there's actually a big difference between the type of predicate, man, human being, that tells you what Socrates is, and the type of predicate, Greek, Athenian, or so forth, that tells you what are his characteristics or properties. And Aristotle's interested in those logical differences, not the grammar of it, even though students often think at first this is about grammar because it talks so much about words and sentences and subjects and predicates. But he's interested in the differences in the things signified by those words. And so you'll hear us talk of Aristotle's 10 categories, which he enumerates in this work, and he sees that as, of all the possible words that can be predicates in a proposition of that kind, they fall into 10 basic groups. So, and he sees that as an insight into the reality of things. There's a real difference between what it means to be Greek or to be tall or short and what it is to be a sort of substantial entity, a man or a human being.
Well, the book begins with the fourfold division, which and finishes with the tenfold division. Let's take those one at a time. What is this fourfold division?
Yeah, so in the second chapter of the work, he gives us a division into two and another division into two, which he then pairs up in a crisscross fashion to get four possibilities. And the language he uses is somewhat confusing, but the basic idea is there are the kinds of beings that exist independently. They exist in their own right, things like rocks and trees and human beings, things you find out there in the world. And then there are those properties we were talking about that you find them in the world, but only in other things. You might find a tall man or a short man, but you're not going to find tall or short existing out there separate from a subject. And so that's one fundamental distinction he makes. Philosophers call that substance and accident. Substance is being the things that are capable of independent existence, and accidents being everything else, the things that exist in substance or are the properties of substance, but cannot exist in their own right. So that's half of the fourfold division. The other half is between the universal and the particular. So you have human being as a species, which is a universal term. We can say that I'm a human being, or you're a human being, or any other person is a human being. So it's a predicate that can be applied to many things. But then there's also the individual, it's myself or you or any particular human being. And the particulars, we don't predicate them of other things. We don't say that take a bunch of human beings and predicate me of them. That doesn't make any sense. So he divides things also into universal concepts and particular individuals. And then he pairs those crisscross. So he has four items in all. You have universal substance, particular substance, universal accident, and particular accident. And it's a little bit complicated, but that's the fourfold division that you're referring to, I believe.
Okay. And then the tenfold?
The tenfold division are the categories proper, the list that the book is named for. And I don't know if we want to enumerate all of those right now. It's a complicated list, but the basic idea is of all those possible predicates we were talking about, he sees them as divided into 10. I will say, though, that of those 10, the first is substance, which is a term that I was just talking about. And so he sees the 10 as divided into substance and then 9 accidents. So he sees a fundamental division there, which is pointed to by his initial fourfold divisions. That's one of the connections between those two. And that's one reason why he does the fourfold division before the 10. And just to name a couple of the most famous ones, we have substance, we have quantity, right? So physical objects can have a size or a number, and quantity is one of their properties, one of their accidents. Or we have quality is another one of his 10 categories, colors, shapes, virtues, things like that.
But those are always predicates.
Those are always predicates, right? We can say Socrates is tall or Socrates is short, and we have a predicate that refers to Aristotle's category of quantity. Mm-hmm. Or we could say that he is Greek, as I said before, and that would be a quality. Socrates is brave, our predicate is a quality, and so forth. And so Aristotle divides all the possible predicates there are into these 10 categories.
And yet predicates can be the subject of a sentence. Green is cheerful.
Green is cheerful. Yes, or green is a color. That's right. Then, and that's why in the quotation you had given me earlier, those can also show up as a subject. We can say man is an animal. Human beings are a kind of animal, right? And so it's true. In general, they can also be the subject. Although for the most part in this work, he's thinking of them as they are predicates. But it is true. We can also say things about them as subjects.
Tell us again, why was Aristotle so interested in these?
Well, it's kind of a big question. I guess one way to approach it would be to say he, having learned from his teacher Plato, who was a student of Socrates, something about the philosophical debates of the day, a lot of his thoughts are in tension with the so-called sophists, of whom Socrates was also an antagonist, the, I want to say philosophers, but not exactly philosophers, the so-called sophists would teach what we might today call philosophy for pay, for money, right? And this was how they earned their living. And basically, Socrates accused them of being hucksters. And he coined the word philosopher to say, they claim to be wise, the sophists. I claim to be a lover of wisdom, a philosopher. And Aristotle is interested in refuting the sorts of what he saw as specious arguments that they made. And in many cases, those arguments hinge on a really careful understanding of what the words you're using mean. So if I could give one example of a sort of standard syllogism, we could say Socrates is human, or a human being, human beings are a species, or man is a species, therefore Socrates is a species. And you might think, that's clearly an erroneous conclusion, but the syllogism looks valid. What's the problem with it? Well, it's actually a little bit difficult to articulate the problem until you have thought carefully about what is the way that the word man is being, how is the word man being used as a predicate in the sentence, Socrates is a man, as opposed to the way it's being used as a subject when we say man is a species. It's the same word in terms of its vocal sound, but it's you being used differently. And if you have never sat down and thought through the uses of words in that way, it's hard to know how to respond to, say, what exactly is the problem with arguments like this? And Aristotle is very interested in that sort of level of detail to be able to understand, refute these arguments he sees as bad arguments, and understand the way things are. So this beginning from careful thought about words is a pretty common theme in his philosophy.
Now, is that applicable somehow to our cultural moment?
Well, I would say yes. We could probably come with a lot of examples there. To give a kind of silly example I give to my students, I read this news story a couple years back about how some school district in Florida had a foreign language requirement, but they had decided to allow students who learned a computer language to satisfy the foreign language requirement. Now, if you know anything about computer programming, you know that just because they're called computer languages doesn't mean that anyone is like learning a foreign language. And so you think, well, why did they make that decision? Why computer programming, why should that satisfy the requirement instead of basket weaving? I don't know. And the reason is because the word was the same, right? So the word language sort of took the place of a thought. And that I think that sort of happens by nature because we use words to think. And so if you really want to have clarity in your thoughts, you've got to think about how you're using the words you're using, what they mean. And that causes all kinds of trouble today. We have these cultural debates over the meaning of the word marriage, to take a more hot-button political issue, or so forth. And a more general level, I'd say, if you don't, it's hard to think well philosophically, and that would apply to our contemporary cultural debates as well, if you haven't thought carefully about how words are used. And that's a big reason why I think philosophy begins with that topic.
In his recent book, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, theologian Carl Truman comments, quote, "The point I am making is that we all live in a world in which it is increasingly easy to imagine that reality is something we can manipulate according to our wills and desires, and not something that we necessarily need to conform ourselves to or passively accept," close quote. By contrast, our goal for Wyoming Catholic College graduates is stated this way, quote, "Grounded in real experience and thoughtful reflection, our graduates love truth, think clearly, and communicate eloquently, engaging with the world as it is," close quote. If you are, or if you know, high school students who want that kind of grounding, learn more about Wyoming Catholic at the college website, wyomingcatholic.edu, and contact our admissions department. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.